Hello and welcome to
another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast.
Brought to you in the very gold this morning cellar of the Gawler Civic Centre here on Kaurna Land in South Australia.
Oh, it's so cold out there, Jane. It's under 10 degrees.
I know. And then for our poor British listeners, it's so hot.
They can't handle the heat.
Well, actually, it's because their buildings were not built ever contemplating that it would ever be over 28 degrees.
Well, this is why we call them pommies, because they look like a pomegranate when they get red and hot on their skin.
I've never heard that one before.
We love to allow our listeners around the world. We love you.
Yes, we've discovered we've got listeners in Poland and Germany and South Africa.
And Russia.
And Britain and the US and Australia.
It's going global, Jane.
We are a global phenomenon. So today, if you remember from last episode, we have opened the door on
West Side Story.
Yay! West Side Story holds a special place in my heart. My parents, back in the day when you could buy piano vocal scores legitimately, they had an entire room of scores for operas and musicals. And I learned how to play the left hand of the piano because I wanted to know how the overture of Maid of the Mountains went. So I just made myself do it. And I came to know a lot of these musicals through their scores rather than their recordings or their films. And I actually don't remember a time when West Side Story wasn't in my consciousness. But the Bernstein score is so phenomenally difficult. Much love to Narelle.
Yes, we love you, Narelle.
Narelle is a great repetiteur and theatre accompanist in Adelaide, South Australia, and she is coming to grips with Mr. Bernstein's work at the moment. So why would Narelle specifically be working on the score of West Side Story, Michael?
Because the Metropolitan Theatre Company of South Australia is doing West Side Story.
At the Arts Theatre in October. That's yes. In Angus Street in Adelaide, South Australia.
We're really looking forward to seeing it.
Very much. They have a very good cast, I must say.
They've cast it pretty well. Mm. I'm very impressed with the casting team.
Well, the director is friend of the podcast, Selena Britz, who was on one of our very early episodes talking about Guys and Dolls. We were hoping to have somebody from the West Side Story production team here with us today to talk about it, because, of course, they are all across all of it right now, but they are right in the midst of it. They've really got not even half an hour to talk to us, because it is just full on, as most of you will know. If you are creating a community theatre production at the very beginning, it's just all hands to the pump. Just getting it happening.
So from another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast, we say chookers to the cast and crew of West Side Story.
We will be there, and the September issue of this podcast will also remind everybody to go and book their tickets.
Yes, grab those seats.
Actually, tickets are open now.
Yes, exactly, yes.
So if you want to go online, it's Met Musicals, metmusicals.com.au.
And I can tell you right now from experience, as soon as you walk in the doors of the Arts Theatre, it's a wonderful, welcoming environment. You just feel like you're going out for a night in the town and you're seeing quality amateur musical theatre.
Oh, sometimes there's professional theatre in there too.
Yes, exactly. Mm. It's a venue for all facets of theatre.
The only thing that people might say about its unwelcomingness is, unfortunately, when it was built, not a lot of thought was given to disability access.
Ah, but I can tell you, the owners of the Arts Theatre are working on that.
Yes, that's why you pay a little bit more on your ticket price when you see a show there.
But it's worth it.
Yes, we wanted all people to be included.
Yes, it's all about inclusion in musical theatre.
So, West Side Story, one of the greatest musicals of all time. Fight me.
Bring it on.
I don't think that we have any regular listeners who would argue with that statement. We have a couple of regular listeners who would have happily come and spoken about this, but one's already been a guest and the other one will be a guest next year. So we just don't want to bore you lovely people.
Jane.
Yes.
Tell us about the history of West Side Story.
Well, it's very interesting, actually. Now, I've written longhand people using cursive writing.
You're old school.
I learned a lot. I could talk for a couple of hours just on the history, but I won't. Don't get upset. Originally conceived in 1949... West Side Story could well have been East Side Story. Jerome Robbins, director, choreographer, and the original man with the idea, originally intended to tell Romeo and Juliet with a Jewish girl and an Italian Catholic boy falling in love on the Lower East Side of Manhattan during the Easter/Passover season. The creative team of Robbins, Arthur Lawrence, who is a playwright and a director, and composer Leonard Bernstein, worked on that idea for some time. The US Library of Congress holds many items belonging to them that relate to this part of the creative process. I spent a long time down the rabbit hole of the Library of Congress website. It's very, very interesting. For example, Bernstein's copy of Romeo and Juliet with his handwritten notes all through it. In the synopsis of scenes at the front of the book, Bernstein wrote, "Opening scene, Mulberry Street Festival, Easter." Elsewhere, he wrote, "Song on racism should be called It's the Jews. An out-and-out plea for racial tolerance." And prologue should be interrupted by street fight. There is also an early scene breakdown typed by Jerome Robbins. At this stage, all the names are still from Shakespeare, Romeo, Tybalt, Mercutio, etc. The Library of Congress collection also has audition notes in Bernstein's handwriting and many photos from the rehearsal period and production. When I was perusing the Library of Congress's marvellous site about the creation of West Side Story, I saw 20 pages of lists and notes on the cast auditions.
20 pages?
It's not one person per page. It was like 30 people per page.
Do tell.
Warren Beatty had a crack.
Did he now?
And Bernstein wrote, "Good voice, can't open his jaw, charming as hell, clean cut."
Yeah, I agree with the not opening of the jaw.
Jerry Orbach, great wow. Read, good loud baritone.
Broadway legend.
Yes, and good loud baritone. Was the original Billy Flynn in Chicago.
Loved him in Law and Order.
Indeed. He was Lumiere in Beauty and the Beast. Now, the role of Tony was cast to Larry Kert, who initially auditioned for Bernardo and Rig, who was a very secondary character. But Bernstein wrote, "Great singer and performer, but looks?" Red riff better. Well, this is the thing about your casting notes. It's very interesting to read casting notes because when Larry walked in to Bernstein, he thought he was the better choice for Riff. Then obviously, later on, the guy who got Riff came in and knocked their socks off.
Exactly.
And Carol Lawrence is described as lovely soprano, not quite Maria, much realer with accent. Well, she must have worked hard, come back for a callback, and she became Maria. Under Cheetah Rivera's name, he didn't write anything. He just circled Anita and underlined it boldly.
Well, if you've got that confidence and can present yourself to that role...
Yeah. Can you imagine anybody other than Cheetah Rivera?
Not really.
No. Oh, well, you know, Rita Moreno did a good job.
I love Cheetah Rivera.
I know. We were so lucky to have seen her at the Adelaide Cabaret Festival.
And not only that, I found one of her CDs in an opportunity shop for 20 cents.
Oh, wow.
That's how much I love her.
You're willing to spend 20 cents.
Hey, I could do a dollar. I could do $5, but they were just selling the CDs for 20 cents.
Because they didn't know the magic they had.
Exactly. They didn't know what they had. I'm not saying I'm cheap.
He is. Alrighty. I urge you to look up Library of Congress West Side Story. It's fascinating. By 1950, the team had decided to bring action right into the present. The Jewish/Catholic divide was no longer a burning social issue. Street gangs and the new wave of migration were hot-button topics. One of the original cast members who lived on West 80th Street remarked that he had to negotiate his way to the theatre through real-life rumbles on 84th Street. Actually, you can Google rumbles on 84th Street. That was a big news story at the time. Yes, it was just a no-go zone, 84th Street, or at least West 84th Street. Once they made the decision to change it to gang wars between Puerto Rican and, quote, white, that is, first-generation American gangs, Bernstein remarked, "Suddenly it all springs to life. I can hear the rhythm and pulses, and most of all, I can feel the form." West Side Story pushed boundaries in many ways. Firstly, creating an unhinged, gritty atmosphere, not only for the audience, but during the rehearsal process. Jerome Robbins intentionally segregated the white and the Latinx performers in order to create an atmosphere of distrust and an us-versus-them mentality. He would even pin newspaper articles on the notice board with "This is your life" written on it. The next way that boundaries were pushed was the use, or rather non-use, of foul language. "Hey, Officer Krupke, Krupp you," and "brass ass" truly shocked the 1950s audience. For the team, it was their love of musical theatre and a belief that such serious topics such as death, attempted rape and murder could be part of a musical. Arthur Lawrence said, "The subject matter, bigotry and violence and prejudice, and all that people would pay money to see with an orchestra." Carol Lawrence, who was the original Maria, remembered the curtain call on the opening night in Washington, D.C. When the curtain went up, they had just seen Tony's body to the strains of "Somewhere" and just a bell tolling. We held hands and they just looked at us and we looked at them. And I thought, "Oh dear Lord, it's a bomb." And then they leapt to their feet, stamping and yelling. Lenny had made his way to the stage, put his arms around me, and we wept. What an experience. So there is a very brief history of West Side Story. Coming up next, we have the synopsis of the plot.
Yes, but we need to tell our listeners about copyright.
Yes, indeed.
We can't use songs from West Side Story on this podcast. Why is that, Jane?
Because in Australia, the legislation really hasn't caught up with how podcasting works. To have the license to play the songs that go with the show, you need a license for playing the recorded music of those particular artists. Then you need another license for playing the works of Bernstein. So there are two different licenses, and yet they don't really cover podcasting. I've done a lot of research over the last month about this, trying to work out, is it doable? And it's not, because they can understand radio broadcasting because you have a scheduled time and an estimated number of listeners. On-demand podcasting, which is what you lovely people are doing, you're listening to it whenever you want, and maybe you're listening to it in 15-minute spurts here and there, or the whole thing at one go, it's very hard for the powers that be to judge how it's being listened to. Having done all this research this month, because one of our coming up guests would love to have us play his recording, we can't do it, just from that licensing point of view. So until the legislators can work their heads around podcasts, we're really unable to put the music in.
We can't play or sing a note, but we can do something better. What's that, Jane?
We have on our Spotify channel a curated playlist of each show that we put out each month. And as much as I can, from original cast recordings, from Australian recordings or West End recording, or interesting ones like just off somebody's album of show tunes, their interpretation of a song from the show. So I try and get every piece that's in it. Sometimes it's just the boy reprise from Act Two. If I can find it, I will put it in that playlist.
And it's really beneficial for those people who want to start out their careers in musical theatre or are in musical theatre and want to research the songs.
Well, there's that. And there's also listening to the plot and then hearing the music. It's a bit similar to when I discovered this show via the score rather than seeing the play. I came to know the motivations behind people's songs and what was going on by listening to the music.
So where can they find another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast?
We are on Spotify and you just can write another opening, another show. And then when you're there, you can decide to follow. And then every month you will get a little notification that we're back.
Don't forget, we are also on YouTube, Usbox, Facebook and Instagram.
Yes, we have social media presence on Facebook and Instagram.
We do.
Usually there will be something with a link to the show, but it's best to go to YouTube or to Spotify programs themselves and you'll find us there.
Talk to us on our socials. Ask us a question you want mentioned on the podcast and we can answer it for you.
Or a comment, as long as it's nice enough. We actually haven't had anybody write in yet.
No, not even a crop you.
No. Now, mind your language, dear.
Crop you, Jane.
Crop you, Michael. You're listening to Another Opening, Another Show, a musical theatre podcast. West Side Story is a very confrontational piece.
Oh, very much so.
It's based on Romeo and Juliet, which had lots of people fighting with swords and lots of death. Therefore, it's moved up to the 1950s in New York. There is just as much death. There is also attempted sexual assault and racial prejudice. So if you do not find such topics bearable, please just fast forward, join us at the Dreamcast, or you can choose not to listen to this particular episode because we don't want anybody ever to feel uncomfortable by our output.
Where can our listeners go or talk to someone who will listen? For example, in Australia, we have Lifeline.
That's right.
Where people can call a particular number and talk to people about their experiences and past traumas to get the help that they need.
Absolutely. Now, every country that we have listeners in has similar support lines, and we urge you to seek them out.
You're not alone. Don't be afraid. Give them a call.
We're here to provide entertainment and a little bit of education, but not to bring anybody down. Don't forget to stick around while our special guest reveals the next show behind the door.
So, Jane.
Yes, Michael.
Are you ready for the synopsis of West Side Story?
Lay it on me.
Act 1. Rival street gangs, the Jets and the Sharks, try to capture control of the neighbourhoods in the Upper West Side of New York City. Officer Krupke and Lieutenant Trank send a warning to the two gangs in person. Stop the fighting. Riff, leader of the Jets, suggests a fight between the Sharks and puts the challenge to Bernardo, leader of the Sharks, at the neighbourhood dance. While doing this, Riff is also trying to sway Tony, a former member of the Jets, to meet Riff and the Jets at the dance. Loyalty is a question, but Riff reassures Jet members that Tony is a Jet and will always be a Jet. Tony holds a decent job at Doc's drugstore and convinces Riff to meet him there. Riff wins Tony over, but Tony is adamant that an important something is around the corner. Maria is employed at a bridal wear shop alongside Anita, girlfriend of Maria's brother Bernardo. Arriving from Puerto Rico, an arranged marriage to Chino, a friend of Bernardo, is in store for Maria. Maria pours her heart out to Anita and tells her truthfully that she is not in love with Chino. Anita makes a dress for Maria to wear at the neighbourhood dance. Dance time. Introductions are made and the teenagers' dance is in full swing. Suddenly a dance-off is called as Tony and Maria see each other for the first time. Eyes locked and an instant connection. Dancing together, they forget about the outside world and fall in love. An angered Bernardo pulls Maria away from Tony, sending Maria home. Tensions rise as a war council meeting between Riff and Bernardo is agreed to at Doc's drugstore, as the store is considered neutral ground. Tony, meanwhile, is happy and hooked on Maria, stalking and finding Maria's building, singing Maria, Maria. The lovebirds confirm their love on a fire escape. Anita and the Sharp Girls debate territory differences of Puerto Rico and the United States of America. Anita is all-American. Rosalita is Puerto Rican through and through. The Jets get itchy feet awaiting the Sharks at Doc's drugstore. Jets and the Sharks then arrive as the choice of weapons is discussed for the rumble. Tony is adamant and they will fight like gentlemen. Fists only, a fair fight. Both leaders agree as the protests get louder and louder from all gang members. Bernardo is adamant he's fighting Tony and must seek vengeance for fighting Riff's second-in-command, Diesel. Lieutenant Shrank's efforts to find a location for the rumble are futile, while Tony confesses to Doc about Maria, but Doc is worried for their new-found love. Tony is steadfast in love and maintains his beliefs nothing can go wrong. The next day, Maria is at work in the bridal shop eagerly waiting to see Tony as she learns about the rumble from Anita. Here comes Tony and Maria, pleas with Tony to stop the fight. Tony agrees. Everyone awaits on anticipation for the events to come later, but later comes too fast as the Jets and the Sharp meet under the highway. The fight begins. Diesel and Bernardo exchange blows. Tony sees this and tries to stop it to make peace. Bernardo taunts and provokes Tony, but Tony is cool, calm, and unswayed. Bernardo punches Tony. Riff punches Bernardo to defend Tony. Knives come out as Tony tries to fight fair as Riff is stabbed by Bernardo. Tony kills Bernardo for revenge in an all-out fight. Police sirens are heard, and all gang members escape except Tony. Stunned by what he did, a tomboy who really wants to be a Jet tells Tony to go and take the knife with him. The bodies of Riff and Bernardo are left on the fighting ground. That's the end of Act 1, Jane. What do you think about that?
It blows my mind. And particularly when you think what the rest of that landscape was on Broadway at that time. Happier. Everything was so happy and joyful. I mean, there are dark bits in Carousel, even Oklahoma. Very confronting for the audience. And that really raw physicality of the choreography, where I'm sure it would have felt like they could come and slit your throat in the audience because they were just so strong and really literally in your face.
We don't suggest anyone do that in musical theatre, to go and slit the throats of audience members.
No. It's a fabulous idea for a murder mystery. It's been used in Midsummer Murders and in a not very good novella I once read about putting on Sweeney Todd and using a real knife. But that was at least cast members, not audience members, in those issues.
Yes, that's right. And the cast members' bodies weren't turned into meat for pies.
No.
I'm sure we'll cover that in another podcast.
Well, in the Sweeney Todd podcast coming soon with an incredibly special guest.
Yes.
Yes, we've got lots of exciting guests coming up. Not to say that our local guests that we have had also this year.
Our local and past guests have been absolutely wonderful and fantastic. We love them to bits.
Mm. And it doesn't matter whether this is your love and you are also just an English teacher, or you are Nancy Hayes, OAAMXYZ.
Or you have an interest in a particular musical that you love.
Yes, well, like Lucy, who is just Ragtime's biggest fan in the entire world, from my point of view. And I don't know which other shows she's mad about. We might have her back next year for another show that she's mad about, but her love of Ragtime was legend. Give it a listen if you haven't already.
Exactly.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jane.
Would you like to tell us the synopsis of Part the Second?
I'm glad you asked, Jane. Act 2. We see Maria unaware of what happened in the rumble that night, daydreaming with her mates, talking about Tony and blissfully happy. Maria goes to the top of her building's roof to dance in the knowledge Tony will stop the rumble. Sharks member Chino tells Maria that Tony killed Bernardo. She flees to the sanctuary of her room and prays that it's not a lie. Tony comes over as Maria still loves him, but pounds his chest in rage. Only one option now, to run away together with pipe dreams of peace. Baby John and Arab, two members of the Jets, are met by Officer Krupke after escaping from the rest of the Jets. For entertainment, the rest of the Jets lampoon Officer Krupke. Tomboy comes to tell the Jets she's been spying on the Sharks and Chino has a gun with Tony's name on it. Jets members spread out to find Tony. As a reward, Tomboy joins the Jets to look for Tony. A grieving Anita goes to Maria's apartment. Tony leaves and tells Maria to meet him at Doc's to escape to the country. Anita sees Tony and Maria together and unleashes anger towards Tony. Maria tells Anita about the power of her love for Tony. Anita confesses about the gun Chino has coming for Tony. Lieutenant Schrank comes to question Maria about her brother's death. Anita then goes to Doc's drugstore to tell Tony to wait. Jets find Tony at Doc's as Anita arrives to racist and sexual taunts towards her. Doc stops them, but a furious Anita delivers the wrong message in spite, telling Tony and the Jets that Chino shot Maria stone cold dead. Tony dreams of the country life and raise a family with Maria evaporate, and feels that life is not worth living and leaves to find Chino. Tony then sees Maria. Chino arrives and Chino completes what he has set out to do. Jets and Shark members, everyone gathered to see Maria hold Tony one last time. Tony is dead. The Jets now move forward with the Sharks as Maria takes Chino's gun, telling everyone, people have died because of the hate for each other. I hate hate, and now I've got a job to do. Maria doesn't have the courage to follow through. She drops the gun. The war is over. The Jets and Sharks gather Tony's body, form a procession to carry Tony away as Maria takes her place, the last person in the procession. End of musical.
Whoa.
I told you it was too much.
Well, it's not too much because it is artfully created to affect this emotional response from us, but we can still manage to go home and live our normal lives.
After reading that, I've got such a lump in my throat.
Mm.
Wow, imagine how audience members felt after seeing it for the first time.
Oh, honestly, minds must have been blown. And those original people might not have actually emerged onto the city streets feeling like they could go and have a cocktail. They might have been a bit shell-shocked.
Do you reckon West Side Story was written to stop the violence?
Or at least give people an understanding of what was going on right next door? Because the Broadway audience would have been people from the Upper East Side, because the Upper West Side wasn't fancy then, who easily could have put their blinders on and just not even noticed what was going on down in the West 80s. I think it might have been part of their thinking that they needed to get this message out to people.
Well, I must say, well done to Stephen Sondheim and Bernstein and Jerome Robbins for bringing that message across. It's an important message.
I think I missed a page. I have actually lost a page from my notepad because I remember that I did mention Stephen Sondheim somewhere, and I know it. I haven't said his name yet today, so thank you for bringing him up. Yes, Stephen Sondheim was the lyricist. He came on board last of all, well into it becoming West Side Story and the plot as we know it. He wasn't there for the very beginning, because at the very beginning he was probably still in school. He was very young when he was working on this.
And what was Sondheim's major influences, Jane?
Well, his godfather was Oscar Hammerstein II, as in Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Wow.
Mm. So he was the lyricist of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals. He also started off in Showboat, which many argue, and I'm one of them, was the first American musical. It was the first book musical that really told the story through the songs. But other shows, and many, many shows after 1927, when Showboat came out, that were just any old plot of boy meets girl, parents don't like boy, he does something redeeming and it's all over, with some great poppy tunes. And Showboat propelled the action through the music and also was a massive cry to the public about racism.
Do you think West Side Story was the start of the Sondheim revolution in musical theatre?
I don't. I think that came a few years later because he worked on West Side Story, then he worked on Gypsy, but Gypsy is still really a Julie Stein musical. We will pose that question to the guest for Sweeney Todd, who really is a Sondheim expert.
I've just got one question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Has Sondheim changed musical theatre in America and how it's perceived?
Yes, but we are talking about a Bernstein musical and we've done enough talk about Sondheim. He was only the fourth wheel.
And now it's time for one of my favourite segments in the whole entire podcast.
And what's that?
Trivia.
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 Trivia, the special Crap You edition.
Crap you.
Crap you, bat, Jane. Lyricist Stephen Sondheim originally intended for G. Officer Kropke to use the F word, but instead of saying F you, he changed it to Crap you, over concerns regarding the soundtrack's release. West Side Story was going to be the first Broadway production to use the F word. Now,
wouldn't fly.
What?
It wouldn't have flown. Try to do that then.
Use your imagination. Choreographer Jerome Robbins insisted on an 8-week dance rehearsal period, double the standard time for Broadway to accommodate the heavy dancing.
It is heavy dancing. But also, if he was insisting on having half the company do their learning and the others sit around backstage and then teach it again to the other half to create his atmosphere.
Well, exactly, yes. In the film of West Side Story with the shooting, Jerome Robbins pushed his actors to very heavy extremes. In the cool scene, the dancers were dancing so hard that the dancers burned through their knee pads and working through 200 pairs of shoes by the end of filming.
Good grief.
I know, they got hot feet. And hot knees.
Oh, yeah.
In the 1961 film, the dresses worn by Anita, Rita Moreno, and Maria, Natalie Wood, during the dance scene cost around $4,000 US at the time, making the dresses some of the most expensive costumes for a movie at that time.
That's insane. They are playing people who earn minimum wage.
To put this into perspective, Jane, a dress worn by Ginger Rogers in the 1944 film Lady in the Dark cost $35,000 US at the time to make. And that same dress in 2026 is worth how much, Jane?
No idea.
Do you want to take a ballpark guess?
$100,000?
Try $644,560.80.
That's a very specific amount.
That's a very expensive dress that I would not wear.
Except in Lady in the Dark, she's supposed to be a rich person. Or she does ballroom dancing for a living. That is Ginger Rogers' stock characters. She's either a rich person who likes ballroom dancing or a ballroom dancer. So her dresses were supposed to be amazing. That is still a ridiculous amount of money for a dress. But Maria and Anita could hardly justify paying $25 for a new dress.
I know, but that brings a wonderful end to trivia.
Trivia?
Trivia.
Except I've got some trivia.
Have you now? Yeah. Breaking news. Jane's got trivia.
Although full of Latin rhythms, including the Mexican dance called the huapanga, Bernstein based the musical motif of the prologue, Something's Coming, Maria, and Cool on the call of the shofar, an ancient Hebrew instrument which is basically a hollowed ram's horn. It is still used for religious ceremonies today. Bonus points for anyone who writes in with the use of the shofar in another musical.
Can I try and say that it's one of my favourite musicals?
It is.
And if you know me, you know what that musical is.
Also, you might be able to go on Ozstage and look one of us up and look at what show we were both in, and you'll find it. There might be at least one other. I feel like there's at least one other biblical musical that's been on Broadway that might have a shofar. Yes. So, if you want to write in, or if you live locally, because you know who I'm talking to, you can pop down here next recording session and do it live on air.
Do your research, and if you write us in with the answer, we will plug you on our podcast and we will shower praise upon your wonderful guests. All praise be.
It's getting a bit of a biblical vibe going here.
I know. I love my biblical stuff. Hey, Jane.
Michael.
We're about to do our Dreamcast for West Side Story.
Yes.
Are you ready?
No. Because I don't have a cast list in front of me. You go first and then I'll just pop in with mine.
Dear listeners, I've done my research and I've cast accordingly. Jane is doing it on the fly.
I have done my research and have left my notes somewhere.
This will test your abilities.
Actual memory. It also might reveal which ones I feel strongly about and ones I just filled in the blank.
This is going to be fun. who would you cast as Maria? So I would cast Maria as Nicole Kidman or Ginger Rogers.
I'm going to try to cast people actually Puerto Rican or Polish or German or Jewish or whatever they're supposed to be. In this day and age, we have enough of a wide field of qualified performers. I am going for Rachel Zegler. I thought that Mr. Spielberg made an excellent choice, and then she has proved herself being Evita on the West End.
Very good. Tony, I would cast Ewan McGregor or Fred Astaire. I'm going with two proven couples in cinema. They have proved themselves to be the perfect couple in film.
Yes. Fred, I suppose,
Ginger, Nicole and Ewan. Ewan's got that Scottish flair. He's very strong.
Yeah, and great for a Polish kid.
Well, he can transfer that over.
Well, maybe he can. Fred, at least, was from the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so I'm not sure if he was Austrian or German.
I've cast it.
Okay. I'm going for... Now, remember, folks, we can time travel. They might be too old for the role or not old enough for the role. Is if at their peak, they were right for the role. That's what we're going for. I've gone for John Voight.
Do tell. Explain John Voight and why you've gone for John Voight.
Because he is of Polish and German extraction.
Mm-hmm.
He was the original Rolf. Rolf?
Rolf.
The boy who is 17 going on 18 in The Sound of Music. Yeah, sorry. I assume all our listeners know Sound of Music
Jane
references.
Is going on the fly for this.
So we know he has singing ability deep down somewhere.
Riff. He's the one that is attention-seeking, that drives the story. He's impulsive. He's the leader. So I've gone for Russell Crowe. Proven leader in various films like Master and Commander, Gladiator.
Okay.
Stomper.
Does Riff have to sing?
Yeah.
I have gone for someone where dancing is his main talent.
Mm-hmm.
And for the life of me, I can't remember his name. It's gone.
Think of someone now.
How about Todd McKinney?
I can see him being a good Riff.
Great actor, great dancer. He's got a lot of energy from within.
Bernardo. I have gone for Esai Morales. Mm-hmm. Now, you might ask, Jane, who is Esai Morales?
Who is Esai Morales? I do know.
He played Bob, the brother of Richie Valens, in La Bamba, the movie.
Yes. He's also been in things much more recently.
Oh, yes, he has too. Mm. I've also gone for Jimmy Smits.
Oh, yes. Yes. At the appropriate age.
Yes, exactly. Mm. The appropriate age and the appropriate look.
Hmm.
Who have you gone for as Bernardo?
I've cast David Alvarez. Now, he's not necessarily well known to the Australian or maybe even the English audience.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Canadian-born dancer of Cuban descent, and he was one of the young Billy Elliots.
Wow.
Mm. And now he's been in many a thing. Oh, he actually was one of the Billy Elliots who shared the Tony.
Of course.
And my other choice... A little bit out of normal because we haven't heard him sing more than a few sentences ever publicly, is John Leguizamo.
Yes. Wonderful casting, Jane.
Did you know, I didn't know until I was researching it, he played Bruno, as in the one we don't talk about.
Really?
He sang a tiny bit in that, but it was a bit of a Sprechstimme, a speak sing. I'd have no idea if he can dance, because Bernardo is supposed to be the best of the male dancers too, or him and Riff.
Anita, one for two actresses who are strong, sassy, and push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone for Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon.
Now, I'm assuming Julia Roberts... In an Erin Brockovich kind of mode.
Yes.
And Susan Sarandon, probably in a more...
Bull Durham.
Banger Sisters.
Yes.
Susan Sarandon goes by her first married surname. She's actually an Italian-American.
Yes.
So she can tap into fiery, passionate, all of that stuff. We know that she can sing because her very first film that she came to prominence in, which was?
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
She was Janet.
Yes, and I believe these two actresses have got the moves.
Well, have they got the dance ability?
They've certainly got the brains for it.
That's true. You do have to be a very...
You've certainly got the brains for it.
..very cluey person to tap into all of this.
Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon, I love them to bits.
Now, I know it sounds like I'm just watching the movie, but I think Ariana DeBose, Spielberg's pick. She's still my pick too. She is of Latinx descent. I think it might actually be Puerto Rican, but I haven't checked that out. She has the singing, the dancing, and the acting, the heart, the intelligence, all of it. And we know that she can do it on stage, not just on film.
Of course. Chino.
Chino.
I have cast two actors in that role.
Mm.
Gaten Matarazzo.
Yes.
And a young Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yes. Yes.
As in La Bamba, he played Richie Valens.
Yes. He then went on to do many a year as the King in The King and I.
Yes.
Prior to us being concerned that you need to actually be Southeast Asian to play the King of Thailand. But he was very, very good at it. So we know he's got the cred.
Yes.
He also has that closed offness that Chino seems to have.
And I've cast Gaten because of his hair. I love Gaten's hair.
If you're just casting him by virtue of his hair, then you need to cast him in Fame to play the piano fellow. Oh. I actually would go, if we're going for young people who are out now, I would also pick Gaten. And in that same vein as Lou Diamond Phillips, Benjamin Bratt.
Yes.
Benjamin Bratt, who is also a Law and Order alumni.
Dum dum.
Careful.
For the roles of Lieutenant Schrank and Officer Krupke, I've cast two actors that can be interchangeable between those roles.
Oh, that's interesting.
Leslie Nielsen and Tom Hanks.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
It depends which one you make the buffoon and which one is the hard line of the law.
Leslie Nielsen is the hard line of the law and Tom Hanks is the buffoon.
I would have gone the opposite.
Ah, see, but I'm different thinking than you are.
Hmm, everyone would expect Leslie Nielsen to be a buffoon.
That's right, because of his comedy roles in The Naked Gun.
Yeah.
But I see him as being the serious one.
Yes. Well, he started off his career seriously.
Being the older statesman.
Hmm. Well, I chose for Lieutenant Schrank, Liev Schreiber.
Interesting.
Because the choice of the names of Schrank and Krupke, to those in the know, saying that they are not the establishment, they're not representing the establishment, they are actually representing just the previous generation of migrants.
Yes.
So, and now, as the young ones probably don't even say anymore, they're pushing people down to big themselves up.
Yes.
So they are bullies. And they are trying to promote themselves as pillars of the community by getting rid of this scourge of the Puerto Ricans. So Liev Schreiber very much comes across as a member of the establishment when you look at him at face value. He's often played characters who are just many generations white American, but he isn't. And he also has played new Americans. From wherever his people are from, Russia, Belarus, wherever.
So, Jane, who else have you cast as Officer Krupke?
Now, he is old-school American. Tom Bosley.
Yes. But not Lieutenant Schrank.
No, because of the height difference. I think Lieutenant Schrank, I would cast the more imposing Liev Schreiber.
Doc, the important casting of Doc, the neutral character in West Side Story. I've only gone for one actor. And when I say his name, that's it. No more discussion.
Okay.
Nick Offerman.
Oh, yes. Now, some people are not familiar with Nick Offerman by name. They will know him by voice.
Exactly.
They will know him by some shows on TV.
He was on The West Wing.
Briefly.
Very, very briefly.
As was half of America's good actors. Nick Offerman, known mainly to us from Parks and Rec.
He's also been here in Adelaide for the Adelaide Cabaret Festival.
Yes, he has. He is married to Megan Mullally, who was in Will and Grace.
I love them. They make a wonderful couple.
Yes, he's a very manly man.
Yes,
I without love being that. A toxic man.
Love that he creates something with his hands that people can use and love and cherish.
I love that they sing together and perform together.
Yes.
Currently, they're in a brand new musical being written in, or just been written, being workshopped in Chicago. So I've got two choices for my doc.
Do tell.
So he's an elder statesman of the first wave of migration.
Mm-hmm.
So Jerry Orbach in yes. his latter years.
Yes.
Or Mandy Patinkin.
Yes.
Because he likes to dispense advice willy-nilly.
I can see Mandy more than Jerry in this role.
Except Mandy's got a physicality which kind of suggests he would get in there and do the fighting. But he is an actor, so he could probably carry it off.
He can sell it.
Yes.
He can sell it.
I don't think Doc gets to sing terribly much, so he might not want to.
Exactly.
But, you know, negotiations have not taken place for our cast.
On the condition that he must have his beard or his moustache in the role.
Yes, we'd have to see if that works with the period, because in the 50s very much was a view that if you had facial hair, you were somehow a social deviant.
He looks weird without the facial hair.
Well, indeed, he doesn't look like himself.
He doesn't look like him.
Then, you know, he's acting. He's not playing him. He's playing Doc.
Well, that's right.
Anybody's.
So I've cast as anybody's two actresses. Anna Klumsky. She was Tomboy in the 1991 film My Girl.
Yes, back in the last vestiges of the use of that term.
Yes.
We don't use that anymore.
And Catherine LaGaia.
Ah, one of the many LaGaias.
One of the many LaGaias who's about to star in Disney's live adaptation of Moana.
Yes. She's a NIDA graduate, as are most of her siblings. And I'm saying this for the non-Australian and Kiwi listeners, because you may not know. Anyway, Catherine LaGaia, great. I think that's a really good casting there. If she were a soprano, she might even be good as Maria.
Well, who knows? You don't know if Catherine.
Well, we know she can sing, but all of Moana's music is very much mezzo. Where God gave you your vocal register is where it is. So some people, particularly when young, can do a whole role in mezzo and then flip up to soprano. I
would love to see Catherine on Play School to follow her father's footsteps.
Yes, also international listeners, Play School, a 50-something year tradition on Australian television for children, is an instrumental part of every Australian person's life. And it's also always cast its presenters from the creme de la creme of the acting fraternity.
Philip Quast.
Indeed.
John Waters.
Yes.
Andrew McFarlane.
Yes, Nynaeve Hazelhurst. John Hamblin.
Yes.
Cinzia Akayu, who is now mainly directing in Sydney, but she's going to appear in Doubt.
Perfect.
Who have I cast as anybody's? I actually think anybody's, because of the nature of her role in the story, should probably be cast as an unknown. Because anybody's kind of hangs around, a bit of a spy and not noticed.
Listeners, I'm about to open the door for the first time ever, and Jane's going to reveal our next musical we're covering on another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast. Here we go.
The Pyjama Game! Yay! Yes,
and we have a guest.
I know who the guest is.
Well, why don't you tell us who our special guest is, Jane?
It is Mark Trevorrow.
Oh, I love Mark.
Now, a lot of people may not know that name, but they do know the name of one of his greatest creations.
Can I say the name?
Yes, say it.
Bob Down.
Bob Down.
I love Bob. His hair looks like a cricket helmet. I love it. It's like a cricket helmet from the 70s.
Now, we may refer to Bob. Now, English listeners also know Bob Down because he was in England for about a decade.
Exactly.
And
On TV.
And was great pals with Julian Clary and the late Paul O'Grady.
Mark was in a band called the Globos here in Australia. I love the Globos.
I remember seeing the Globos on Countdown early in the morning, and I must have been quite small because I'm not as old as I sometimes say I am. And Mark has an incredible musical pedigree. We are privileged to know him through that comedy character, but we're going to be talking to the man, Mark Trevorrow. And his favourite musical of all time is The Pyjama Game.
So, Jane, what's Mark doing at the moment?
At the moment, he's been touring with the marvellous Bev Kennedy, the musical director, and his friend Rupert Knopfs.
Oh, I love Rupert. I've seen videos of him. He's got a wonderful singing voice.
Mm. And they've got a marvellous chemistry together, and their show is called Old Friends. So obviously they sing that song by Sondheim, but they sing a wonderful array of musical theatre numbers and some pops rearranged by Bev for the two male voices together. It's just great.
They've got wonderful chemistry together, and they gel together, and they know each other inside and out.
Yeah, it's a joy to watch. I've seen some of it on YouTube because, unfortunately, the powers that be and Cabaret in Adelaide have not extended that invitation for a couple of years. So hopefully we might get a groundswell of excitement, and that can be used to help convince them to book Old Friends for us to see in South Australia.
Now, our listeners, if you have any questions you want us to ask Mark, do send them in on our socials and on Facebook.
Try to keep them directed towards Pyjama Game.
Yes.
So, the Pyjama Game, great movie musical and great stage musical.
Yes, of course.
And not done nearly enough anymore in the community theatre landscape.
Brush up your Shakespeare, Jane.
What's that got to do with anything?
That's in the Pyjama Game.
That's from Kiss Me, Kate.
Oh, damn it!
The Pyjama Game is about, funnily enough, pyjamas, not Shakespeare.
Really? I love pyjamas. I'm sure our listeners love pyjamas as well.
You need to go back into your pyjamas and go back to bed.
I do. I really, really do. And on that note, we shall end our podcast of West Side Story.
Thank you for listening to another opening, another show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Which you can stream on YouTube, Spotify and Castbox, and get involved with us at our email address, aoas2025@hotmail.com. That's aoas2025@hotmail.com.
Tell us where you're listening from. We'll give you a shout out on the podcast.
And if you've got anything you'd like to say about anything we've done thus far, or you've got some interesting tidbits about Pyjama Game, drop us a line. Thank you for listening to another opening, another show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Here on Kaurna Land in South Australia.
In a very cold Gawler. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.